You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. This week, we've been checking in with some reporters around the world to learn more about the effect coronavirus has had on people globally. And the reporters we're talking to, well, they have something in common. They are or were affiliated with KELW. Today, we go to Europe to understand more about how it's managing the crisis. According to the WHO, Spain and Italy have had more cases of COVID-19 and more deaths than China. France, Germany, and the UK are also battling thousands of infections. Each country's taking its own unique measures to deal with the epidemic, and that has caused some conflict within the European Union. That's according to journalist RTM's Konahovs. He was a KELW visiting reporter from Latvia some years ago. Today he's stationed in Brussels covering the EU. I called him up to chat about what he's seeing in Europe right now. So first of all, how is your family and community doing back home in Latvia right now?
So in Latvia, all of the people that I know are fine. The restrictions there are not as strict as in some of the other countries. They're not even as strict as they are in Belgium, where I am right now. So in Latvia, people can still walk around and they can, go shopping, and some of the restaurants are open. So a lot of those things are still available. The only things that you cannot do is that you cannot be in bigger groups. You have to be either the family or maximum two people, and you shouldn't visit your friends or your relatives or anyone else who doesn't live with you in the same household. But you can go on a walk with them. It's not advisable, but it's allowed. And so I think so far it's been a reasonably good situation. Not too many cases. They're talking about, let's say, 20 cases, 10 cases a day in the country of a little bit less than 2 million inhabitants.
So I'm looking at the WHO's kind of the latest numbers that it puts out, the situation reports. And in Europe, let's talk about Belgium, where you are. It looks like there are more than 19,000 cases. And around you, these other countries, varying numbers. I mean, we know Spain and Italy have the largest number of cases, and then comes Germany, France, UK. And it seems to the observer from over here that these countries are taking some different measures. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes, indeed. The measures are different, and it has to do with the fact that the European Union is not a federal state, but a community of countries. Of course, there have been a lot of criticism that this has not been communicated together, that it's not been done properly, that the countries have at least initially done a lot of unilateral measures. There's been a lot of criticism for sort of unilateral actions and slow reactions. But in a way, it can also be compared to the way US is dealing with it. And every state can have a slightly different approach to the situation and can have a slightly different measures, also depending on the way this, how difficult the situation is. Italy had it first. It was really a severe lockdown, still goes on, while in let's say further north and or somewhere in Eastern Europe, there's simply the mobility, it was not so high, there aren't so many cases, and therefore those countries didn't have to introduce, at least initially, such a strict measures that other countries have. And you have to see that, for instance, it also pretty much has to do with the mentality of each country. Let's say.
How so?
In France, I think, then it's my observation, people are used to this sort of grand rhetorics. They want to talk about like big words, like when President of France, Emmanuel Macron, was addressing the nation, he used the word war several times, I think at least three times in his address, speaking about the needs that we are at war against the virus and we all need to come together. This is the invisible enemy and all this kind of rhetoric. While the address that Belgian Prime Minister Sophie Wilmès gave just a day later was first much shorter than what the French president was saying. And the second was introducing somewhat similar measures, but in a much more kind of relaxed tone without using a word war or any kind of similar comparisons even once. She asked people to be kind of more considerate about their actions and comply with the restrictions. So unlike in France and Belgium, you don't need to print out some sort of a document which you sign yourself to say that you can leave the house, you know?
So that's what's happening in France?
Yes, that's what I hear from the news reports, is that you have to print out some sort of a document that is available online, and you fill it in yourself and you sign it. And then if police asks, then you should be able to present that document, which proves that you're only walking outside for certain amount of time.
So I'm going to the store, I'm going to take a walk, I need to have the paper.
Exactly. Every time you need to have a paper. And I'm not sure, but I think that's also the number of visits outside per day is limited. And then, of course, there is also in France, they try to limit the amount of people who are, how far from the house you can go. You know, you shouldn't go too far, even if you're doing some sports. Same story is in Italy and some other places as well.
Mm. But Belgium, not so much. What about the countries surrounding you? You talked about France. What about like the Netherlands or Germany?
Yes, Germany and the Netherlands have, again, slightly different approaches. In Germany, again, it varies from one region to the other, because police and this sort of law and order are under the each of the federal lands. But generally speaking, rules in Germany are similar to the ones in Belgium. Basically, it's not very strict. But yes, a lot of shops are closed, a lot of, let's say, hairdressers and beauty salons and everywhere where people can go for, let's say, recreation, that all is not available. And you're advised not to visit your friends and family, stay indoors as much as possible. But supermarkets and all other food stores are available and schools are closed. That's universally around Europe. So this type of measures, you can still go out, but you're not advised to. And if I'm correct, then you can still meet in groups of maximum five if you do it indoors. While Netherlands and more so Sweden has been a very kind of different example. Sweden has not taken almost any of these measures that we're talking about right now. Yes, they've decided, and that's been announced by the Prime Minister. He said that, you know, we're all grown-up people, he said, and that therefore we should behave like grown-up people. And
he's just trusting the population's maturity.
Exactly. He's trusting the population to act maturely. So parks are open. People are allowed to sit on the grass. People are allowed to meet up. People are allowed to do different things. They're just advised to somehow reduce that, but not too much. It's not a very strict advice. And that in part has to do with what I also referred earlier to. It has to do with the nation's identity or mentality. Some people say that Swedish people have been practicing social distance for years. That's their norm, you know? Mm-hmm. Having your grandparents in the elderly house is norm, you know, so they don't live in the same household with you. Like around a half of households in Sweden are the single person households. So you don't have to deal with the fact that it's people who would be, you know, transmitting it from one generation to the other, or the kind of infecting the family. It's because a lot of people just live on their own. And, you know, I still remember the phrase said by someone who moved to Sweden a while ago, this woman was very surprised that people can still consider each other friends, even if the only contact they have is one phone call over Christmas.
Wow. So there are many cultural differences within Europe. I'm wondering about the UK and what you're seeing, how people are talking about the United Kingdom now that it really isn't a part of Europe, but at the same time, you know, there's some cooperation happening. The Guardian reporting that the United Kingdom discussed a joint EU plan to buy COVID-19 medical supplies. So what's that relationship like there now after Brexit and in this catastrophe?
I would say it's pretty ambivalent because on one end, it's problem that is affecting all the European countries and really most of the countries all over the world. On the other end, healthcare has always been the national prerogative. So this is not the issue where EU has a lot of competences or a lot of say. With the UK, there has been some discussions, but it's a little bit unclear because now that they left the European Union, that they are still in a transition period. But there is a lot of national rhetoric in the UK, or I would even say nationalistic rhetoric, that they can do it on their own, that their healthcare system is wonderful, that they don't need Brussels to help them out on this, that they can manage, and so on and so forth, and that they say that they do not participate in those joint meetings where the members of different European countries are discussing the joint procurement of, let's say, ventilators that are also lacking. And at the same time, then afterwards, they were forced to admit that it maybe would have been better if they would have participated in this, or because of this, kind of the civil servants might have not been able to make decisions quickly enough because they didn't know what the political reaction would be from the political leadership if they joined this kind of common actions, and therefore they missed the deadline to apply, that they also need some ventilators. And so there has been this kind of post-Brexit nationalistic rhetoric that this current government is known for. It's also been interfering with this whole story.
What are you working on right now?
The biggest debate here actually is right now about the economic recovery. So how do we make sure that the economic recovery is swift, that it's efficient, and what are the tools that we need to employ in order to achieve that? And there is a lot of disagreement on it. A lot of countries are, and a lot of politicians are calling for the new Marshall Plan for Europe. But it needs to be, you know, much sooner than it was after the Second World War, because Marshall Plan was only introduced in 1947, so 2 years after the war was over. Now, we need the Marshall Plan this year, quickly, to boost the economic recovery. And there is a lot of disagreements on how to do it. And they almost have to do with, as some people say, religious beliefs by certain groups of countries. So the South, they want to have, let's say, a joint bond that would be issued and sort of common debt. So you issue joint bonds that are guaranteed by all EU member states. That allows the southern countries to borrow money really cheaply.
So that's Spain, Italy.
Spain, Italy, and France are like the main drivers.
I see.
There. So they want this kind of special fund that would issue like bonds, and then they can use that money to flood the economy with money and boost the recovery. While countries in the north and the most vocal ones are Netherlands, Finland, but also Austria and Germany, are saying, no way we will ever be going to guarantee your debt. So, because what common bonds means, they mean common debt. And this is something that they don't want, and that has to go with, some call it, you know, a lazy versus, you know, the hardworking ones, or the Protestant working culture versus the more decadent approach, and so on. You know, this has a lot of kind of mistrust between the regions. And you also have to remember that this anti-European sentiment that a lot of countries are dealing with, it has it's fueled by very different reasons in different countries. Mm-hmm. In the north, they say, well, Europe is bad because we have to support those lazy people in the south. And in the south, they say Europe is bad because there isn't lack of solidarity. We have to face all the crises on our own, and they don't understand us. They don't want to help us, and so on. They are then evoking the Second World War again and saying, "Yes, you see, that's no one is helping," and that's fueling their kind of unhappiness with Europe.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, RTMs, thank you very much.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
RTM's Kanahavs is a former KALW visiting journalist. He's stationed in Brussels, Belgium. You can hear more of my conversation with him at kalw.org.